Good morning. Can you hear me? I feel like it's not on. Yes? No? I know.
Hello, everyone. We're going to get started.
I know. All right. Good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning. I hope everybody had a great morning already. Welcome to session 8 of this morning. We're going to be kicking off. I should introduce myself. I forgot that part. So, good morning. My name is Jamie Crane. I'm the Director of Stewardship and Development for the Diocese of Colorado Springs. I'm also Region 13's board representative here for ICSC. It's my privilege to be the moderator today and introduce our lovely speaker. But before we get started, we're going to do our prayer, the conference prayer. So if you could join me in prayer, in the name of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from the profound sense of gratitude for your blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord, forever and ever. Amen. All right, so welcome. I see more coming in. It's lots of friendly faces out there. It's great to see. So today our speaker is Madeline Weed from the Catholic Foundation of Central Florida. And she is the Vice President and Chief Donor Service Officers for the foundation. Actually, her bio is quite impressive. We were talking about it earlier. And so I really encourage you to see her background. She's traveled a couple places. And so without further ado, Madeline.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's a Monday morning. I'm so happy to see you all. Thank you for waking up and bright and early and being here with us today. I'm excited to talk to you about plan giving because plan giving is fun. Plan giving, it really is. It's a fantastic opportunity to talk to people about the largest gift they'll probably ever make, a gift they probably never thought they ever could make. And the best thing is, with most plan giving vehicles, it doesn't cost them anything during their lifetime. So if we have that frame of mind as we go into these conversations, we're going to be in a good place where we're not Debbie Downers, we're not nervous about bringing up death, we're talking about a really positive opportunity. So with that frame of mind, we'll move forward. So you're here today. There's plenty of seats up front if you want to come up. Sorry. So can you hear me okay in the back? Okay, awesome. So you're is the mic not on? I have to eat the mic. Can you hear me now? Wow, okay. Very close to the podium. I'll try to talk loud, too, so I apologize to the people in the front, but hopefully you'll be able to hear me. You're here because you know there is power in plan giving, right? So we've all heard a lot of great things about plan giving. A lot of times we just don't know where to start. We don't have time to start. But these are a few statistics from Giving USA just to kind of reiterate the power of plan giving. It's low-cost fundraising. A lot of times you have to wait a while. You're not going to go and you're not going to walk away with a check. You have to wait. But putting that in when the time comes, these gifts are large. The average gift is $35,000. Last year for our diocese, the average gift was $85,000, the average gift. The most common gift in this report was six figures. And it creates a culture of charity and plants seeds for the future. It lets people know that you're thinking about the long-term financial stability of your organization and of the church. And we all hear about the great, my boss just walked in. Hi. Okay, now I gotta behave. So, the intergenerational wealth transfer is underway, and we know that that's happening. So now is the time to really get started. So just a little snapshot of this great wealth transfer. They're saying that $72 trillion is... It's magic. Okay. $72 trillion is going to transfer over the next, thank you, next 20 or so years between 45 million households. And Forbes estimates that $12 trillion of that is going to go to charities. I think that if we together elevate the conversation around planned giving, that number can be much higher. And if you think about that, you think about the average gift being $35,000, our average gift last year being $85,000. Think about what that can do for your ministries, right? Maybe you received a planned gift that was transformational, and usually it comes at the time when it's needed most, and it can do some incredible things. So why talk to parishioners about planned giving? Well, 67% of Americans do not have a will. So if they don't have a will, most likely, well, probably they don't have a gift to charity in there. So talking to them is starting a conversation about how they can use the gifts that God has entrusted to them to safeguard their future, the future of their family, and their spiritual family, the church, as well as ministries on their heart. So why don't we focus on this? Because of fear, right? So a lot of you participated in the poll ahead of time, and honestly, I'll post the results to that, but they were across the board. But a lot of people say, well, I don't want to have a conversation about death. It's awkward. Well, yeah, that would be awkward. That's why we don't talk about death when we talk about planned giving. You don't know enough. It is technical. A lot of the gifts are very technical, but really it's not our job to be the expert in a lot of those things. We just have to know enough to be dangerous and have partnerships with people who do know all the technical pieces. You're unsure about who does what. When do I engage an estate attorney or have them engage an estate attorney? When do I talk to somebody about a charitable remainder trust? And then shift away from money needed now. And that's a big problem for a lot of us who are not focused solely on planned giving. We have other buckets we need to fill. And we feel like if we put time into these things that are not going to result in a check now, that our time could be better spent doing something else. But studies have shown that people who leave a charity in their estate plans become more charitable now, because they're invested in you down the road. So they want to make sure that you're financially stable, right? They want to make sure that you're successful. And then what happens if I ask and they say yes? What do I do next? So we're going to talk about some of those things, about conquering your fears. And for me, to conquer fears is to have a plan, right? So a lot of times we're paralyzed by fear until we know what the next step would be. So we'll go through formalizing a planned gift program, and this is going to be different. This is going to be different if you're at a foundation. You're going to probably have a pretty high-level planned giving program. But if you're at a single cause nonprofit, if you're at a parish or a ministry, you can rely on a foundation if you have one, or a diocesan stewardship office if they have planned giving pieces for you. Or you might have to develop something that you can handle at your individual location. We're going to educate constituents, ask, or we like to say invite people to make a gift, recognize and steward donors. So let's talk about some of that. So formalizing a planned gift program, it's talking about how you cultivate, educate, support and steward planned gift donors. You're going to define what planned giving vehicles you're going to promote. You're going to create an SOP for handling active, pending, and matured gifts. Again, this is what do I do if they say yes kind of situation. And partner with professional advisors. Again, you don't have to be the expert on charitable remainder trusts. You just have to know who you talk to if somebody's interested in that. And then establish a legacy society. And this one I get a lot of, like, eye rolls. Because people are like, people don't give planned gifts because you have a legacy society. Well, you're right. They don't. We have legacy societies because it's a marketing tool for us. It's an opportunity for us to say, you're part of this. We're reaching out to you because you're part of the society. This is really a tool for us, not a piece for your donors that's going to propel them to make a planned gift. So defining which planned giving vehicles to promote. The most common planned giving vehicle as a bequest. And that's good news because that's easy, right? That's just them putting you in a trust or will. Followed by charitable beneficiaries, and I will say that this number is growing. We see it growing. Studies, Dr. Russell James talked about this the other day. This is growing. This is also good because this is very simple for your donors to do. They don't need to go to an attorney. They just need to go to their retirement plan administrator and change the beneficiary form. Same thing with a life insurance policy. This is super easy for the donor to do. These assets also move outside of probate, so the likelihood of you getting that and getting it quickly is much higher. And then, of course, charitable trusts. Another statistic that I like to point out is that 50% of donors say that their planned gift in the bequest is a percentage and not a dollar amount. Some people like to know, okay, they're leaving $100,000 for me in their estate plan, and that's great if you know that. But most people underestimate the value of their estate. So if you're in there for a percentage, in their mind, they're like, well, I can give 5 or 10% to charity. Well, that number in a dollar amount ends up being way higher than what they might give if they're thinking, well, how much, you know, what's my biggest gift? What can I leave to charity? So don't be afraid of percentages. That's really turns out oftentimes to be a much larger gift. Know your gift acceptance policy. If you've been to my other presentations, I kind of hound on this. How many people here have a copy at their desk or know where it is on their computer? Okay, that's actually a good number of people. If you do not, find it. Ask your leaders about it. If you're at a parish or a ministry, talk to your foundation, talk to your diocesan stewardship office, ask for a copy of the gift acceptance policy. It's really important to know which gifts you should not accept. These gifts come with liability and risk for your organization, and it's a good opportunity if somebody wants to leave one of those gifts to say, thank you so much for thinking of us, but we cannot accept this type of gift. There are ways around it in some circumstances, like we don't accept gifts of vehicles. There are exceptions. If an entity needs a van and somebody's willing to donate a van, that's one thing. But if somebody wants to donate their, like, Toyota Corolla, we're not going to go through that effort, right? But we do partner with CarEasy.org. They do all of the work. They get the vehicle, they do the paperwork, they sell the car, they take what is well-earned to them, and they send the parish the rest. So, I mean, it's incredible, and we have to do, like, zero work other than put it in the CRM. So know your gift acceptance policy. And then make sure you have documentation, right? So when somebody says yes, get documentation of that gift. Understand what their intention is. Understand what type of gift you're going to be receiving. Is it from a retirement plan? Is it in a will or trust? Is it through some other type of asset or property? That's good to know because sometimes they'll tell you on here, again, you go back to your gift acceptance policy and you're like, oh. And you then have that conversation. I have copies of this up here that you can grab afterwards. Otherwise, everything that I'm going to show you that's a resource that we have is available for free on our website. All right. And then I like to throw this up here. This is, again, like, it's okay if you're not the expert. How many people in here are from an entity, a parish, a school, or a ministry? Okay. Hopefully, you're not alone in this. So maybe you've received something before, some legal paperwork, some documentation that they want you to sign. It looks very official, and it is. If you don't know what to do, again, call your foundation if you have one. Call your diocesan stewardship office and ask them to review that for you. Most of the time, it's fine. It's normal. What you're signing is appropriate. But there are times, and we just had something recently, where family was asking the church to waive their interest in an estate. So luckily the parish reached out to us. We were able to talk to the bishop. We talked to the diocesan attorney, and we were able to have a conversation with the family and come to a compromise. But you're not in it alone. And we tell our parishes, like, if you don't know what it is, don't sign it. Just come and talk to us. Professional advisory council. Again, you don't have to be the expert. One of the most significant changes in donor motivation is influence of their professional advisors. We had this happen 2 weeks ago. We had a donor reach out to us, so excited during Make-A-Will month. She was going to go see her attorney. She was leaving the church in her
estate plans, and she wanted to start an endowment. She wanted to name the endowment after her father. We had a conversation with her. We were working everything up. We gave her the language to give to the attorney to put in the will. She reaches out to us the next week and says, met with the attorney. He said, just give the money to the church. That's not what the donor wanted. The attorney didn't understand the motivation behind what the donor was trying to do. So we're in the middle of follow-up with the donor right now. But again, a lot of times professional advisors, they're just thinking about what's easiest and less complicated, but they're not understanding the charitable goals of their clients. So your donors have these advisors at their table. You should have people at your table too. And this is also an opportunity for education for those advisors to let them know about the benefit of charity. We have a Planned Giving Advisory Council. This group is known by many names. A lot of foundations have a group similar. Our group is about 30 individuals in the areas of estate planning, attorneys, wealth advisors, CPAs, insurance professionals. We meet 4 times a year. We provide educational opportunities like talking about AI, talking about tax law changes, talking about Medicaid, Medicare. Always have social opportunities because networking is a big part of this. We talk about the CAP program, which I'll talk about in a minute. But it really is about making sure that they're ambassadors for the Catholic Church in Central Florida and that we also provide them opportunities for continuing education. So I mentioned CAP. Does everybody here know what CAP is? Okay. So CAP is Chartered Advisor in Philanthropy. This is a designation offered by the American College of Financial Services. It's available to anybody who works in the area of gift planning. But if you, I know people on the survey or on the poll said, you know, they don't know what they don't know, or they're nervous because they don't know the technical side of things. This course teaches you that. I was in development for 20 years before I took this course. I was a CFRE. I knew a lot about talking to donors, but some of those conversations around planned giving or charitable giving vehicles frightened me. But I took this course, and it gave me the knowledge and the comfort to really know what I should be talking about with donors and how I should be working with financial advisors in the process. So we in Central Florida have a study group that brings people together from all those sectors, but you can take this on your own, and I'd highly recommend it if you want to really ground yourself in different ways to talk to donors about charitable giving vehicles. And then the Legacy Society. So our Legacy Society is called the Vivos Christi Society, and again, this is a tool we use to thank donors, again, who are oftentimes going to be making their largest gift today. So many times we receive information about a gift that's being realized. The person's gone. We didn't have a chance to thank them. So this is our opportunity to thank them now, to steward them now for their future gift. We send a welcome kit. The bishop will send a note card. If the donor's okay with us alerting the parish or the school or the ministry, we'll let that pastor or our executive director or principal know, and they'll send a letter of thanks as well. Okay. So on to number 2, educate your constituents. So this is a really important part of this. Plan giving is a process. Dripping that information over time is going to be huge, okay? Yeah, you don't want to walk into a conversation with a parishioner or a donor and bring up planned giving when they haven't heard anything about it before. So putting brochures in the narthex, information in the bulletin, having information on your website, social media, putting that out there so they get comfortable with the idea of it, that is a great way to start, and it's going to set you up for success. So we have a partnership with Free Will. I think people might also have a partnership with My Catholic Will, same kind of online will-making tool. And this is a bulletin insert that we sent out to all of our parishes that they could drop in. Talks about why having a will is important, how to reach out to a Catholic professional, or how to use Free Will. In our first year using Free Will, we were notified of, they don't have to notify you even if they use the tool, we were notified of 32 bequests worth over $4.5 million, and we continue to build on that. And we're very careful about how we push out Free Will because of our strong partnership with our state attorneys. So we oftentimes will talk about, you know, free will as a tool to get started, free will as a tool to organize yourself and then take that paperwork to an attorney to review. But we also know that not everyone is going to go to an attorney. We had a gentleman go to an attorney after our advice. The attorney worked and drafted it all. He didn't want to pay the $300 to have it signed and then decided to just write on a piece of paper what his intention was, which was to leave everything to the diocese, signed it, no witnesses, died, and then luckily we had also talked to him about beneficiary designations and he had done all of that. That's what we were able to collect. We were not able to collect on mineral rights. We were not able to collect on his condo. So there were other things we were not able to do because he didn't take that final step. He just wasn't going to pay an attorney, right? And we all have those people in our organizations. Okay, some other graphics that we provide. We customize all of these for our parishes, schools, and ministries. The vertical one is really like a pew card size. So this is something they could print, put in the pews for people to take. Don't hesitate to put bequest language out there. Your EIN is not a secret. Drop it everywhere. Put it on your website. Make it as easy as possible to make a gift to you to change and enlist you as a beneficiary designation. And they'll need your EIN and they'll need your legal name of your parish or your organization. So put that out there. Put that on the website. Put it in the bulletin. Put it wherever, because they can take it and they might not want you to know they're doing this. A lot of times they'll say, well, I might want to change it in the future. Or, you know, I don't want the pastor to know that I have money, right? So sometimes they'll work with a Catholic foundation for that purpose, or sometimes they're just not going to tell anybody and do it. So give them the information to do it, okay? This is a buck slip that we put out there. It was double-sided. This was the side about our PGAC. The flip side was about free will. In addition to the great wealth transfer, we like to talk about the great values transfer. As we look in our pews and we see the age of a lot of our longtime loyal parishioners, their children, their grandchildren oftentimes are not practicing Catholics. This is an opportunity, and we've created some resources to help them tell the story of their Catholic faith, why it's important to them, how it's guided their life, what their hopes are for the future. These are resources that we have that allow them to write that down, to create a video to tell their story, because part of their legacy is their story. And sometimes people don't realize how interesting their story is. So let's give them an opportunity to reflect on that. That will oftentimes result in that close connection or realization of that close connection with your entity and a gift. Legacy planning seminars. Dr. Russell James talked the other day about some of the wording here, and I agree with him. Not everybody connects with legacy, right? So sometimes just calling it a wills and trust seminar. Let's just make it super obvious. End of life issue seminar. So, you know, whatever is best or works for your community. Again, if you're at a one cause nonprofit, talk to your foundation. A lot of times they're doing these and they'll bring these to your parish. Here's a video. For those of you who got to see a sneak peek earlier, I'll play now.
Legacy, a lot of things come to mind, but what's so important is that it really is the culmination of your life's values, your dreams, your wishes, just a multitude of things that really matter in life.
The importance of having your estate plan lays out a few ways of where your assets are going to go, so that way your beneficiaries are able to receive their assets in a nice, easy process that follows the state of Florida's laws. If you don't have an estate plan, the state of Florida creates that plan for you. When they create that plan for you, it's based on their plan and where their assets are.
We really wanted to reach out to parishioners and give them an opportunity to learn about legacy planning. They don't know much about it from what we got as far as feedback. And they also want to know more about how can they support the Catholic faith.
First, when I heard it, it was kind of like, wow, you know. A lot of people don't want to talk about this stuff, but our parish, we had 60 people came to this event today, which shows that there was a great need for it to happen, and people are interested in it.
I am here today because I have absolutely nothing in place as far as a legacy goes. Even if you do have a good idea about what you want to do, it's still important to come because you're going to learn something.
Working with Sarah has been wonderful. She's a dream come true when it comes to collaborating with someone because all of the materials we needed and for today, PowerPoint presentations, handouts about specific things, she provided everything. I would tell anyone who wants to collaborate with the Catholic Foundation that they will learn a lot and gain a lot in the process.
So we like to keep our videos short. This one had really two audiences. We originally were putting this video together for our pastors and business administrators to show again, you know, it's easy to work with us. Your parishioners want this, but then some of the testimony we got, we're going to share that out also to people to think about attending a legacy seminar. On the previous page, I had a quote from a parishioner who attended one of these seminars. He had moved down from out of state. He and his wife had been talking about the plan, the need to plan, and, you know, like most people, you just put it off. So they went to the legacy seminar. They visited with an attorney afterwards and got their plan set within 18 months. His wife died. And he said how grateful he was to his parish for offering that opportunity for him, because then when they were going through what was a shocking time in their life, it was unexpected, this was something he didn't have to worry about. The plans for the funeral were in place. The plans for the transfer of assets were in place. He knew what his wife wanted. This is a ministry for your parishioners. It's a ministry for the people in our diocese. So we're doing good work. Talking about plan giving is a ministry, and it's fun. Okay, so something new we did, people at the Foundation Forum had a chance to hear a little bit about this. This is something new we did this year during Make-A-Wills Month. We had a Wine and Wills event. We have had a lot of seminars where we talk at people. This was an opportunity to engage. So this was an open house style event. We had four of our PGAC member attorneys there. We had two notaries there. This was an opportunity for people to have questions answered and for them to have documents finalized and made legally binding. So we had a couple of sponsors for this, and it was a fantastically attended event. We had 60 people again for our first time. That was probably as many as we wanted to have there. In advance, we sent them a wills guide. We sent them a link to free will so they could again start preparing and make the most out of their time there. We also sent the Catholic Directive on Life and Death. This is a great healthcare directive that's based on Catholic values that they could have witnessed there. And we had almost everybody had, including my husband and I, had our Catholic declaration finalized there. So they could walk away and have something done, right? Okay, so tell stories. We know we can't be in front of everybody. So for our foundations out there, putting together little video snippets about different types of giving opportunities is huge. And so we put together a series last year called Philanthropy Moments. And I'll play again a short one. It's about a minute and a half for you now.
Your parish is, in many ways, the spiritual hub of your life. It might be where you or your loved ones were baptized, confirmed, and married. What can you do to give back and enable future generations of Catholics to receive the spiritual care and experience the gift of community that has nurtured and formed generations of Catholics? Your parish was built and has been maintained by the generosity of parishioners who came before you. You can leave a lasting legacy to continue the work of your home parish in several ways, and we can assist you in determining a way that best matches your personal circumstances. Whether through a bequest or a beneficiary designation, or through a charitable trust, endowment, or donor-advised fund. We're happy to meet with you individually, with your family, or invite you to attend one of our legacy planning seminars offered throughout the diocese, which features local professionals in the areas of estate and financial planning. Together, we can provide resources to help you plan your Catholic legacy. Thank you for joining me for this philanthropy moment.
So I think we have about 20 of these on our website.
We throw them out on social media through our e-newsletter and just have those available. But again, it's a way if a donor is exploring the website, just to click on different things that they might be interested in, or maybe something catches their attention, and they can dig in and learn a little bit more about it. So this is an incredibly crucial step. You've put information out there to educate people. You need to ask. You need to invite them to make a gift. Nearly 70% of people, probably higher within our parishes, give during their lifetime, but only 6% leave a bequest. Why is that? It's because nobody's asked them to do it, right? So donors who are asked to include a charitable gift in their will or trust are 17 times more likely to do so than those who are not asked. So it's really important to ask people to do that. So one easy way to do it is, again, just passive invitation, right? Put information out there on your website, in your bulletin, but word it in a way that is kind of inviting them to consider that type of gift. Email signatures, another huge way. If you're not using an email signature, that's like wasted real estate every time you reach out. So you can rotate that around, but put that in there. Put something in there just, again, to get people thinking. You never know when somebody's getting ready to consider updating their estate plan, creating an estate plan. So just have that be top of mind that they think of you when they're thinking about that. So. Have it on your website. Have information. How many people have information about how to give an estate gift on their website? Okay, that's a good number. How many people have exact bequest language cut and paste on their website? Okay, pretty good. So make sure that's on there. Always give them the opportunity to reach out to somebody for more information, but have the information on there that they can just take and run with if they want to. I'm going to throw this out there because this is something I'm really passionate about, gifts of non-cash assets. When you're putting something up there about leaving the parish, the entity in your estate plans, make sure you have information up there about other ways that they can give today. If you have a donate button and it goes directly to a credit card page and it doesn't give somebody another option, you're missing out. Most people will give much larger gifts if they give through these type of assets. And if they see it, they're going to know if it applies to them. So include that information on there. Again, it's okay to put your EIN number out there, but don't just have a donate button that goes directly to a credit card, okay? Give this other information out there. We have seen massive, massive increases in giving through IRA, qualified charitable distributions, and through donor-advised funds over the last 3 years. Massive. And if you're not talking to your parishioners about this, you're missing an opportunity. Active invitations. The part that really scares everybody is actually talking to someone about making a planned gift. So who do you talk to? You need to identify those prospects. We have limited time. This is my recommendation. Create a list of donors who have been loyal to your organization with giving 10 or more years. If you need to narrow it down more, go to the people who are over 60. If you need to narrow it down more, go to the people who have no children. Okay? So that's a place to start. And then reach out. Don't be afraid of this, okay? So phone calls, easy way to start a conversation. Thank them for being loyal donors. Thank them for their longtime support of your organization. Ask some questions about their time at the parish, a beloved pastor or somebody who's been there that they might have a good story about. And then if you have an event coming up, personally invite them to that event. Personally invite them to something at the church or just to have coffee or lunch. So just get that going, get that relationship started. A letter, if there are some people who don't like phone calls, so you don't want to annoy somebody if they don't like phone calls, send a letter, send an email. Same kind of thing, introduce yourself, thank them for their long time giving, invite them to something, share a new resource that you have available, and then invite that additional conversation. An e-blast, a little less personal, but at least getting information out there. Again, this can be about new resources. It could be an event that's coming up. And then when you're in person, listen to learn. You know in the back of your mind that you have an agenda, right? You want to talk to them about a planned gift or you want to talk to them about a major gift. But don't go in there just ready to pounce, especially the first time, right? Go in there to learn about them because they're going to provide you information that's going to help you build a way for them to make a really impactful gift in a way that's possible for them and meaningful for them. And then have some kind of leave behind. We have a wills guide over here. We have some other, I have some other material you can pick up afterwards. It can be a book. It can be a prayer card. It could be a rosary. It could be anything, but make sure you leave something behind. And then when you're ready to talk to them about a specific gift, have a proposal ready to leave behind. So what do I say? Again, I think it's important to remember that bequests offer the opportunity for them to make a transformative gift, probably the largest in their lifetime and bigger than they could think that they could ever give. Don't talk about death. Talk about a legacy. Talk about the legacy they've already started creating with their life, right? Don't be too pushy about it. Ask them what they want their legacy to be. Talk to them and just keep them moving on that frame of thought. Don't get too technical, right? You know the technical side of things, but just talk to them about impact. Do not give legal or financial advice, okay? You're going to want to encourage them to go and talk to their tax accountant, to their financial advisor, to their estate attorney. But you can highlight the benefits of different charitable giving tools, right? Give them that little nugget to drop in. Don't dismiss their personal circumstances. They're probably worried about the world today. They're worried about their family. They're worried about their grandchildren. You know, understand, be understanding of that. Give them examples of donors like them. This is a famous Russell James line. Donors like them who do things like this, right? And then don't forget to follow up. Okay, most of the time you go there, you might think it went great. You're like, they're definitely going to do something. But if you go radio silence, a lot of times, again, for them, they're scared to start. They're not sure where to start. They need that additional follow-up. So follow up with them. Provide them additional resources. Have another meeting with them. So don't forget follow-up. That can take time. That could take years. But don't give up on the donors, right? My previous boss, who was a Benedictine monk, said, no is not no until the will is read, right? So just continue to have conversations. This I find to be very important and something that a lot of people, especially extroverted people who like to talk, have a hard time with. Be an active listener when you're in these conversations, especially when you're talking to people about planned giving. You want to listen, again, to learn, not just to respond, even though you have something really exciting to say. Listen to learn about them. Ask open-ended questions. Be attentive. Do not look at your watch. Okay, if you're going into these conversations, plan for a couple hours. Give yourself buffer time. You don't want somebody talking, and a lot of times these are older folks, they need somebody to talk to, right? It's gonna be a while. But the last thing you want is to be like constantly looking, making them feel uncomfortable. Bless you. So give yourself time for these conversations. Observe body language. Okay, sometimes these conversations can make other people uncomfortable. Pay attention to that. Change the subject if you need to. Show empathy, avoid judgment, and use short verbal affirmations that you understand as you move things forward. Then the fun part. Once they say yes, recognize you can never say thank you too much, too often. We have, again, our welcome kit. We have our bishop reach out. We have pastors reach out to say thank you. We include them in giving society lists. If they want to be anonymous, we still include them as an anonymous donor, but always be very attentive to their wishes on that. We ask them if they'd like to share a donor story. We had a priest recently who decided to leave something and start an endowment fund, and he was really excited to share his story about sabbaticals. He's kind of paying it forward and starting an endowment to provide dollars for sabbaticals for his brother priests. So super excited to tell his story. And then invite them to events. We used to have dinner events, right? So invite people out. You have a nice dinner with the bishop, photos. Well, a lot of your planned giving donors are older. Driving at night is a problem. Driving from far reaches of the diocese is a problem. So we talked to our board and we're like, what do we do? What can we do better? And they said, well, what's really unique about us is that we're Catholic. So we should weave spirituality into anything that we do with our donors. So we decided to do these gathering in gratitude events. We're going to probably do about two a year, and they're going to be more pilgrimages. So our first one was Stations of the Cross with the Bishop at one of our parishes that just opened a beautiful grotto with an outside Stations of the Cross, really magnificent. And it was in an area of the diocese that's not centralized, and we don't get to often, but we have quite a few Legacy Society members there. It was really well attended, but there was a monsoon. Okay. So that morning, just coming down, and luckily, again, we could do it in the church, which we did. The bishop led it. It was beautiful. We had a nice lunch. No big program. It was just about saying thank you. The bishop went around to the tables. Everybody was happy. We had people drive about 80 miles to come to this, right? So we invited everybody, even though it was kind of in a corner of the diocese, and several people came. And then afterwards, of course, the skies opened up just as we were finishing. So the bishop invited everybody who wanted to go out to the grotto, looked around, and it ended up being a beautiful day. We sent out different versions of this collage to everybody who attended. So they had personal pictures of them with the bishop. There was one young family there, and we just got some really cool pictures. But it was a beautiful event and much more enjoyable than our usual pomp and circumstance dinners. And then steward. Okay, so planned giving donors can be fickle. Planned gifts oftentimes are revocable. It's very, very important to keep up your relationship with your planned giving donors. Touch base with them at least annually. One thing that we do for everybody is a birthday card. It seems so little, but I can't tell you the number of people who reach out to me to say, the first birthday card I get every year is from the Catholic Foundation. And oftentimes I hear the only birthday card I get is from the Catholic Foundation. Yes, Gina?
Quick question on the birthdays. How have you guys gotten that data?
We get it sometimes from the parish, right? So the parish has birthdays in there and pass it over. We will ask that of some of the donors based on their information if they're comfortable. But our information's pretty accurate. We're lucky.
Yeah.
The enrollment form, you could ask it on there, just make it optional. But, yeah, we're blessed to have that information. And, again, that's been a good thing for us over time. But build that. Invite them to things. If they stop giving at the parish, again, as they get older, don't stop communicating. Okay? That happens. Keep communicating because you're probably still in the will, or they might make a change right toward the end of their life. You want to make sure that they're still thinking about you. Okay? So what are the results if you do some type of planned giving program? So this is just a snapshot of what we received in last year. So we got $4.6 million in matured planned gifts in 2023 calendar year. This is the breakout of how those dollars were directed. Beautiful thing, $3.5 million of that was unrestricted, right? And so as you saw earlier with the Giving USA report, a majority is bequests. We saw the same thing. Growing number of retirement accounts. We still get real estate, which is oftentimes down in Florida now, a really large gift. Gift annuities, life insurance. And again, we had asked our parishes what the greatest needs in the parishes were. And this is the list that they gave us. And again, $3.5 million unrestricted. These parishes can do a lot and cover a lot when they receive one of these surprise gifts. Okay. How am I on time? Okay. So that is the end of my presentation. I hope that you pulled a few things to help you kind of conquer some of those fears. Happy to take questions.
Oh, yeah, I waited for the question. Just a couple of things. So
yeah.
We had a couple of times where adult children, like you mentioned, who don't go to church or anything, mm-hmm. how should they be involved in the education of this? Because some of them can persuade their parents not to give. And we've had a couple of those struggles in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to push one way, but these children who are nuns, whatever, you know, they're not interested in that. So that's mm-hmm. the first thing. The second thing, yeah. just the second thing, mm-hmm. is how do you deal with overcoming feelings versus what we could give? So, for example, a pastor, for example, they hate it, or they hated certain things, and they never give to this. And then you have to try to undo some of that and fix that mm-hmm. up. So So I struggle. So those are two things that I
sure.
wonder.
Well, I think I'll start with the second one. So hit those obstacles head on. When somebody's telling you something that they were upset about, it's an opportunity for you to overcome that and move forward. So those, I learned that working at Disney. A lot of times you just need to listen, right? They just need to vent. So when you have, that's inevitable. You know, every organization has something where somebody's upset about it. Take those conversations as an opportunity to understand how they're feeling, let them know they've been heard, but then move toward the future. That's what all of this is about. It's about moving forward. It's a vision for the future. The only time that's difficult is if they're unhappy with a pastor right now. Right, if something that's happening in the parish that you can't deal with right now, that can be a struggle. But again, the church has lasted 2,000 years. We want to last far into the future, right? So we might be stuck in today, what's happening now, but pastors change. Everything changes as we move forward. And their gift is for future generations of Catholics. It's for the future of that parish and all the people that will be served by them in the future. So if you have to listen and understand because they need to be heard. But then again, trying to overcome that and talk about the power of the future and the longevity of the church is sometimes how you can overcome that. And then when you're dealing with children, that's difficult. That resource that I talked about it's a legacy journal, a legacy letter, or sharing, you know, your values. That's really important, is making sure that the children understand why the parents' faith is important to them, how it's guided them, why charity is important as part of their life's journey, and not everybody's going to respond to that, right? But if the parents are grounded and understand why they're giving and why that faith is core to them, then hopefully the children can balk at it at all they want to, but this is their money. They've earned it, and this is what the impact that they want to make and the legacy that they want to leave. A lot of times an endowment can overcome that too. If they start an endowment now for something that's important, that's in place, and then something in their estate plan can build that endowment. Again, that's legacy. That's a way their parents will be remembered. Sometimes that's an opportunity to overcome that too. Family dynamics are tough, right? The legacy journal and letter are ways to write things down when you don't have to be in the heat of the moment. You can really get your full expression out and then hand that over at a family meeting, or maybe just send it to them and let them reflect on it instead of having a heated one-on-one conversation, you know, a la Thanksgiving table style where people storm off and leave. Is writing and reading gives an opportunity to digest. Sorry. Yeah, and it's a tough one. That's a tough one. Yes?
What would be some first steps to getting a professional advisor group?
Oh, yeah. That's actually like a big question, and I'm happy to have a side conversation about how we did it. But actually, it's pretty fun. You know, you can get started and understand what you want, how you want the group to function, who you want to be a part of it. I know Charlotte has a really large group, and not just Catholics, but really everybody, because it's a great idea because they're, again, trying to get their information out there and advise any advisor, regardless of whether they're Catholic, who might have Catholic clients, right? So I think that's great. We love having our small group together because it really is mutually beneficial relationship. We call them when we have a question. They call us when they have a client and they need certain language. And then we have that educational component. But the hardest part sometimes is identifying, you know, who's Catholic. They don't often have that on their bio on the website, right? We have a Catholic Lawyers Guild, so that was a way for us to start somewhere. And then it's a lot of like, who else do you know? And then just asking them. You know, we have this group, we're starting this group of Catholic professionals. You know, are you Catholic or is somebody at your firm Catholic? If you're, are you with a foundation?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're receiving planned gifts in?
The back of the bulletin, yeah.
The back of the bulletin is good. Or what I've found is not just back, we look at the back of the bulletin. We put ads in the bulletin. We send stuff to the parishes about the group
because you're going to catch people who might not identify themselves another way, who might reach out. Wine and Wills, our biggest response was from parish bulletin announcements. So, but I'm happy to have a side conversation with a little bit more detail about how exactly we did that. But I love our PJC. It's one of the most fun parts of my job is working with them. Yeah.
Question about like a legacy planning document that you might have on your website versus free will, mm-hmm. as far as a starting point. Because what I probably should have done is consulted some more people on the state attorneys on their feelings signing up for free will. Mm-hmm. I'm a CAT member. The study group leader is CAT.
Okay.
I asked him about it. And he said, well, I'm not. I asked him about joining one, starting one. He said, well, you might find some trouble because you guys are using free will.
You're not wrong. And we have some attorneys who don't love it. But again, having that conversation that there are, they understand, they know. There are some people who are just never going to come to an attorney. And if we don't have something available for them, we're leaving them out completely. And then they die and they don't have a plan. So with some of those attorneys, once we talk to them about that, they get it. They don't love it, but they get it.
Hi. My question is also the free will and your professional advisor thing. Mm-hmm. And you went quickly through it. Did you have a bug slip with free will on one side mm-hmm. and your professional?
Yep.
Do you have a copy of it?
But I can. I'm happy to send it. Grab my card if you can email me just because I didn't bring something down to write notes.
Okay.
But I'm happy to send that to you. But again, in our verbiage about free will, we talk about using that as a tool to organize that they can bring to an estate attorney or have notarized. But we try to be very clear about that.
I'm sure we experience that tension. People call you. They want me to print the will. And just the tension with unauthorized practice of law, the coercion, and all that.
We have that tool available, like TurboTax is available.
Okay.
It's available to them. You know, we partner and provide the opportunity that they can drop down and see any parish, school, or ministry in our diocese. We provide that as a, you know, just as a gift to everybody. But we don't talk them through it. We're never going to handhold them through that. You know, they could come and have something notarized. A lot of people who came to our Wine and Wills went through free will, printed it off, and brought it to the attorney. Again, just to say, this is what we put together, and then we actually hope, we want everybody to work with an attorney. Like, very few people don't need some kind of will or trust document. They should advise an attorney, and that's always where we're going to go first. But we do know, again, not everybody's going to. Yeah.
What is the cost to the parish to use your resources?
Zero. So we do receive some money from the diocese to help with plan giving across the board. So anything that we do is free to the parish. Anything. And let me go back really quick to your comment. I do have a copy up here of an updated wills guide. It was, it's a Crescendo-based product that we updated, but we do have that as an organizer too that they could take to their attorney. And we push that out probably more so than free will when we're talking with donors. So I have a copy up here if you want it, but it's also available on our website. One more? Yeah. Like a naming opportunity?
Yeah.
So we prefer not to do that. We had a situation at an entity where they were redoing landscaping and there were bronze plates at trees that got demolished during the change in landscaping. So we will avoid that. And our diocese came up with a naming rights document that they shared with all of the parishes, schools, and ministries about the rules about naming opportunities. If it comes to a building or something like that, there are some opportunities out there, but there's very strict guidelines on those. But as much as possible, I would stay away from anything that has a string attached. For most donors, not necessary. I would aim them if they really want some kind of legacy to an endowment. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much.
All right, just want to give a reminder in your Whova app. If you want to go in, there's the survey to let us know if what worked, what didn't work, if you wanted more info. So please fill out your surveys, and Madeline will be up here if you have questions and direct questions. Myself too. So thank you again. Oh, yes, yes. The slides will be loaded into the app as well. So, yes.